Can you hear now? And in Cedar Point or Barrier Methods, okay? So before I do that, before I give the outline for my lecture, let me give a preview of the lectures that I intend to give. The first lecture I've already mentioned. The second lecture will be about first-order methods for optimization, problems, variation inequality, and saddle point problems. And in the third lecture, I intend to talk about the complexity of the augmented Lagrangian method and also augmented Lagrangian-based algorithms for solving semi-definite programming. So this is the outline for my first lecture. So the first part of the talk, I will talk about subconcurrency and barrier methods, also called interior point methods. I will start by giving a discussion about the classical modern view of barrier methods. They introduce the definition of subconcordant functions, and they talk about, define what is called subconcordant barriers. We then discuss path-parallel barrier or interior point methods. We give a small update version and a larger update version. And then we discuss how the Newton directions are computed for this problem. This is, in fact, a major work involved in these in IP methods, the computation of Newton directions. And then we discuss how the work involved in computing these directions in the context of LP and SDP. But I mentioned that this theory is very general. It applies for much more general classes of problems. We are just focusing on LP and SDP because of lack of time. Okay? Then in the second part of the talk, we will discuss primer dual long step SDP methods. So in this context, we're going to focus only on the SDP context. In this context, we discuss optimality conditions, the notion of the central path, then talk about, introduce a general framework of primer dual algorithms for which the long step is a special case, and then talk about the MZ formula of such directions that is used by these methods, and the other ingredients for specifying the long step method, and finish with a complexity result. Okay, let me give a one transparency overview about barrier methods. So suppose you consider this problem of minimizing f of x, where x is supposed to lie in a set capital X. We assume that f is continuous and x is a set such that it is not empty and is equal to it's equal to the closure of its relative interior. So we would say that a continuous function b defined in the relative interior of x is a barrier for x if it satisfies this property, that it converges to infinity as the point y approaches a point in the relative boundary of the set x. Having such a barrier, you can form what is called the t-barrier subproblem, defined in this way. You multiply you multiply f of x by t, and then add to it the barrier. And as t goes to infinity, you're giving more weight toward the function f of x, so the optimal solutions of this problem will converge to an optimal solution of the original problem. This is one of the classical results about barrier methods that was known for a long time together with many other classical methods. Okay, so now let me briefly discuss the classical and I would say pessimistic view of barrier methods, and then talk about the modern view of barrier methods. Okay? So the classical view of barrier method was that at that time people knew that the Hessian of the barrier subproblem becomes extremely unconditioned as t goes to infinity. As a result, PT becomes harder to solve. And moreover, barrier methods requires a point in the relative interior of the feasible region to be started. Okay? So because of that, people simply didn't believe that this method was efficient. And this method was abandoned for quite a while until around 1987, which was about 3 or 4 years after the Kamakaze introduced his interior point method. Okay, at that time, people start looking at these methods again from a different point of view. And they focus instead on special cases of it. They consider the case, first of all, where the objective function is linear. F is linear. and X is an open convex set endowed with a self-concordant barrier. An example of such a barrier would be the logarithmic barrier, which is the negative of the, oh sorry, it's missing a log in here, sum of the logs of the XJs for the non-negative operand, okay? So, but the other idea was to use Newton's method to solve the barrier subproblems. The barrier subproblems. This was one of the ideas. So interior point methods, and the methods we called interior point methods. The interior point methods are the second order methods because they are based on Newton's method. And the other idea was to follow the central path. You can always stay very near the path. These are automatically forces that you cannot do very large updates on T, so you're forced to do small updates of T. So this leads to the class of methods called small update methods. Or you can do large updates of the parameter T, and then in that case you solve the barrier subproblem until a point near the path is obtained, and then you do another aggressive update of T and so forth. So as a result of that, the three ideas people established polynomial elevation complexity bounds. Wenegar was the first to establish in a different context using the method of centers. Then Gonzaga, using this framework of barrier methods, established complexity for a small update method and also for a large update method, all in the context of LP. And then Nesterov and Emirovsky generalized all these to a much broader framework. In particular in the framework of the general optimization problem as explained here, where X admits a self-concordant barrier. Okay, so let me now explain the theory. So let me start with the definition of self-concordant function. A self-concordant function is a closed convex function, H, which might take value plus infinity, such that the domain is open, and H is three times continuously differentiable in its domain. Moreover, for every point X you pick in direction, this third directional derivative is bound in the absolute value by two times the second directional derivative to the power 3/2. So if you consider this one-dimensional function of T, so I'm using the same notation as the barrier subproblem. That T here has nothing to do with that T. So it means that the third derivative is bounded by two times the second derivative to the power 3/2, okay? And because of the requirement that H is closed, this is the barrier for the domain. It goes to infinity as the point approaches the boundary of its domain. So we say that a self-concordant function is non-degenerate if the Hessian is positive definite. This is a natural assumption to make, and this allows you to define norms induced by this function. So such functions induce huge two local norms. So if you're given X and vectors UV, you can define what's called the local norm at X. You scale U by the Hessian to the power of half and take the norm. The usual norm can be a Euclidean norm or some inner product norm that you fix a priori. And the other norm is the dual norm associated with the local norm, which is defined in this way, is always defined like that. But in this particular case, it becomes like this. So I note that star then, with this definition, means that the third derivative of H is bounded by 2, if you define the norm of this third derivative in this way. So self-concordance function is nothing more than requiring that the third derivative is bounded for every point X in the domain, in this particular norm here, the norm induced by the Hessian. So let me, the self-concordant functions are extremely good for Newton's method, as this result indicates. Let me read this result for you. Suppose that you have H is a non-degenerate self-concordant function, and for a point X in each domain, you define this measure here. This is kind of a measure of closeness of X to the optimal solution of H. Because if you take the global solution of H, then the gradient vanishes there. So this lambda would be zero there. So this can be viewed as how close X is to the global minimizer. So the notion of subsequent concordance is so strong that you have this condition here. If you have a point such that lambda x is less than 1, then you can claim that the global minimum exists and is unique. Uniqueness comes from the fact that the function is strictly convex. And move over, the point you obtain by taking Newton's step, it's in the domain, and if you measure the proximity measure at the point obtained by taking Newton's step, you get this formula. So you have quadratic convergence, okay? So for lambda small, you have quadratic convergence. How B says that for lambda large, on the other hand, if you take a dump Newton step, then this dump Newton step is still in the domain, and you are able to reduce H by a sufficiently amount. Okay, the amount is expressed by log 1 plus delta minus delta. This is a negative quantity, where delta is the lower bound on this measure there. Okay? So Newton's method is very good for this function. For in a neighborhood, you have quadratic convergence, and far away, you're always able to reduce it, to reduce the constant by a fixed amount. Okay, now the definition of new self-concordant barrier. So a new self-concordant barrier is essentially a non-degenerate self-concordant function such that for every x in the domain, and u in direction u, you can bound the first directional derivative by this formula, square root of nu, which is nu is the parameter of self-concordance, times the second directional derivative to the power of half. What this means is that the gradient of h in the dual local norm is bounded by square root of nu, okay? This quantity is defined here. This is how you define the dual local norm. Okay, so there are a number of things. This property of being self-concordant is preserved in the several operations that you can do with convex functions. So here I state two of them. One is if you take linear combinations, as long as the coefficients of the linear combinations are greater than or equal to 1, then you still obtain a self-concordant barrier where the parameter is going to be obtained in this form. And the second says that if you take a new self-concordant barrier and you take an affine map and compose with H, you still get a self-concordant barrier. And there are many other operations that preserve the property of being a self-concordant barrier. So with this way, you can come up with a complex self-concordant barrier from easy ones, okay? So now let's talk about algorithms, path-following algorithms, and how does this definition plays a role for in the design of algorithms. So let's consider the problem of interest for us is going to be the problem of minimizing linear function. As I said at the beginning, we are going to focus on the case where f is linear. And x admits a self-concordant barrier. That means x is the closure of the domain of b, where b is a new self-concordant barrier. And associated with this problem, we can define what is called the central path, which is the collection of global minimizers, as t varies over the positive numbers, of this problem here, which is the t-barrier subproblem. Before we had t times f of x, now we have t times the linear function. Okay? So this proposition says that this is always well defined. If the set of optimal solutions of star is no-empty and bounded, then x star is always exists. It's a well-defined thing. And it's unique because of strict this function is strict convex. Okay, so the path following strategy is to follow this path very closely, is to follow this path, except that because you cannot follow exactly, so you have to do in an approximate sense. In this sense, the following proximity measure, that we measure how close you are to the central path, plays an important role. So if you are giving t greater than 0 and an arbitrary point x in the domain of b, you can define lambda t of x to be the size of the gradient of this objective function in the dual local norm. So this provides a measure of how far x is to this global minimum, x star of t, or in another word, the t central path point. So you have the following proposition that says that if you have a point, x t, a pair x t, such that the proximity measure is bounded by beta which is less than one, then you can estimate the how far the objective function is to the optimal value v. So this is the primal optimal gap. And it's bounded by a constant that depends on beta and the parameter nu, as well as on the factor 1 over t. The t is the parameter that defines the t-barrier subproblem. Okay. So you want to make t as large as possible to make this goes to zero as fast as possible. So here is the statement for the small update path-following method. So you start with a point very close to satisfying the proximity. So you have a pair x zero and t zero that satisfy this proximity criteria. For beta is small, okay? Beta 1/9. So you stop the algorithm whenever this is satisfied. This guarantees that the final point, you satisfy the criteria you want. You know, specify epsilon, you stop whenever the primal optimality gap is less than or equal to epsilon. So this guarantees that because of this condition guarantees this because of the previous proposition we stated. So otherwise we update, we make a conservative update of tk is 1 plus a small factor here. And when you do this update, you kind of, this is no longer satisfied. You will lose that. But once you perform one step of Newton's method with respect to the new t-barrier subproblem with t equal to this new update here, then you recover the centrality condition again. And so because of that, this method has the following property. All points generated are feasible. They are, remember, the domain of B is in the interior of X. And you always have this condition. This condition you started with and is preserved throughout the method. So the proximity measure is preserved throughout. And the algorithm terminates in this many number of steps. Okay? The number of steps is determined by the self-concordance parameter, nu, and the tolerance epsilon, and the T0 that you started with, okay? I will not discuss how you initialize methods like this, but there are ways you can cleverly initialize methods like this. Okay. So now let me turn to the discussion about large update path-following method. So here, you beta can be arbitrarily between 0 and 1, and you start with a point at 0 to 0 that satisfies this proximity criteria again. Again, this first step is the same as before. You stop whenever this is satisfied. And here you do an aggressive update of t. The number 10 there was chosen arbitrarily for this talk, but you could put it there 100, 1,000, whatever you want. And then the point xk will no longer satisfy this proximity criterion. You will see that this is an invariant. You have this, but when you update to tk plus 1, this is lost. And then what you do is you do a couple of inner iterations. These are dump Newton iterations, okay, until the proximity criterion is obtained back again, okay? So with this, you keep this invariant satisfied. Every xk will satisfy this. And move over. The algorithm terminates within this many number of iterations. What I mean iterations are the inner iterations, because you have these inner iterations here. And we can talk about an outer iteration. An outer iteration is whenever you update the t, okay? So this is complex in terms of the inner iteration. That's when you really compute a Newton direction here. This is the Newton direction here. Okay, then you terminate with the optimality gap being less than or equal to epsilon. Now the complexity is slightly worse. Before we had a square root of nu there, now we have nu. So this method has worse complexity, but in practice works much better than the short step method. So making aggressive updates of t is worthwhile. Okay. So I would like now to talk about slightly extension. Before we are dealing with the problem of minimizing these linear functions subject to x being the set x. Now we add this manifold where we assume a is linear function and b is a m vector. So first, how do you define Newton direction? Newton direction has a clear definition, right? you pick a point X, which is a strictly feasible point, that means a slatter point, is a point X in the interior of X such that it's in the manifold. Then the Newton direction, which depends both on X and T, for the T bar subproblem is the unique optimal solution of this problem here. Okay? This is the second order approximation for the T bar objective function, and this is the condition that D is a feasible direction. So, you can easily write down the KKT conditions for this problem and then do some algebra. You're going to see that you can compute delta X by first computing V by solving this linear system. This matrix in here is what's called the normal equation. Okay? So you solve for V, replace V here, and then you compute delta X. The major amount of work is to form this matrix here and then factor it or solve this system in some way. And it turns out that you don't need to develop any new theory for understanding this problem, because this problem can be reduced to the previous case if you instead view the problem this way. You define V tilde to be the function obtained from the barrier for this whole set X. You just restrict that to the interior of X intersected with AX equal B, and you set it to be infinity otherwise. So this function, defined this way, is going to be a new self-concordant for this set in here. This set now has a no empty interior for X, when X is intersected with this affine manifold. So you can identify this affine manifold with a vector space, and the whole theory we talked about earlier holds also for vector spaces. And you can show also that the delta X obtained in this manner is going to be a Newton direction in the unconstrained sense, satisfy a system of linear equations like that. This is how we define Newton direction before. And see, here is the Hessian and the gradient with respect to the environment space in here, which is L plus X here. It's not overall, it's just in that subspace. Okay. So let me now illustrate the computational difficulty of computing Newton direction for two special cases. One is linear programming, and the other is SVP problems. So let's start with linear programming. We consider this problem here minimizing the inner product of two n vectors. X is the variable. A is m by n, and B is an m-dimensional vector. C is an n-dimensional vector. So the usual self-concordant barrier that is used in this context is the negative of the sum of the logs of the xj's. Okay, this is, you can prove that this is a n self-concordant barrier for the non-negative order. So the complexity of the small update then reduces to this. You just get this by replacing the general complexity before. You replace nu by n there, and you get this formula here. Now, the computational work of computing this direction. In this case, the Hessian is just a diagonal matrix. X here would be in the diagonal with the xj's, the components of vector x along the diagonal. So x minus 2 then is just a diagonal with these elements along the diagonal, 1 over xj squared. So the point is that this is a diagonal matrix, and so the normal matrix reduces to this, AX squared A transpose. Okay? So the major amount of work is to form this matrix and then factorize it. Yeah? And to form this matrix takes n times m squared flops, and to factor it, another m cubed flop. Okay? Now, for sparse LPs, for sparse LPs, I mean those in which AA transpose is very sparse and also admits a very sparse Cholesky factorization, probably by doing some symmetric permutations of rows and columns. Then you can do this much quicker. And the reason is because this matrix AX squared A transpose has the same sparsity pattern as A transpose. By putting a diagonal in the middle, it doesn't change the sparsity pattern. And this is very helpful. And as a result, you can solve huge LPs by using, I would say, prime or dual variants of the methods we just talked about. in very reasonable amount of time. Okay, now let's talk about SDP. SDP problems. So we have this notation, Sn will denote the set of n by n symmetric matrices. And the problem is to minimize a linear function. This minimize this inner product here, which is defined. This is inner product of two symmetric matrices, which is defined like this. Subject to constraints of similar type, you have this inner product equal to bi, and the essential constraint that x is a positive semi-definite and symmetric. So these are all data, okay, that appears there, and x is the variable. So the dual then takes the following form. It is the problem of maximizing B transpose Y, where the vector B is obtained from these right-hand sides in here, subject to this constraint here. The sum of the YI times AI's plus a dual slack is equal to C, where the dual slack is positive semi-definite. Okay, so this notation can be simplified a little if you introduce the following operators. If you define the operator from Sn, which is the space of symmetric n by n matrices, into Rm, defined in this way, the ith component of 8 evaluated at x is defined to be this inner product. Then you can simplify P. Clearly, you can simplify P to this form in terms of the operator. And B now takes this form here, where because the adjoint of this A defined this way is exactly this term in here. So there is a natural log barrier, self-concordant barrier for this problem, which is defined as the negative of the log of the determinant of X, which has an alternative expression as being the negative of the sum of the log of the eigenvalues of X. Okay? So this is there is a lot of similarity between linear programming and SDP if you make this identification between the eigenvalues of the matrix X with the components of the vector X that appears in linear programming. Okay, this turned out to be a n self-concordant barrier okay. So the notation I'm using here, this is Sn plus means the cone of positive semi-definite matrices. And Sn plus plus means the cone of positive definite matrix.
Yes.
This is
the first time. So why do we choose this function, say, for the positive order, minus sum of the logarithm x I? So it's self-concordant, but is there a simple way of explaining why to choose this function, exactly this function, not another function?
Well, you have to ask Kamata. He came up with this idea. And what motivated him to come up with this idea? I have no idea, but I mean, he may have tried, huh? Yes, but yes, okay, so that's a good, yeah. Okay. Now, let me discuss the work of computing this Newton direction. So, the ijth entry of the normal matrix, in this case, is the ijth entry is given by this inner product in here, because to compute the ijth entry, you have to multiply on the left by the unit vector. The unit vector is being denoted by E sub I. You multiply on the left by E sub I transpose, and on the right by ej, and And because you have this A here, you can put it to the other side. You get this inner product here. Now, you use the fact that the Hessian inverse applied to H is exactly X multiplied by H multiplied by X. And the fact that the adjoint evaluated at a unit vector is exactly the matrix AI. So then you replace these, use this fact, and you end up with this unit product in here. So to find the ijth entry, you have to compute this inner product in here, okay? Now, this matrix, this is a bad news, is that this matrix is always dense, even when the matrix AA adjoint is sparse, okay? This is a bad thing for SDP. Now, let me give you the complexity involved in here for dense problems. For dense problems, this is the number of flops you have to perform. This MN cubed is due to the fact that you have to compute this product for every J. You have J varies from 1 to M, so you have to form this product. This product takes N cubed to form. N cubed. So you have M of them, so this is MN cubed. And then you have to compute these unit products for every pair. So you have M square of them, and each takes N square. So you have this factor here. And the other factor is to factor the matrix, to compute a Cholesky factorization of the matrix. Okay? For problems in which M is on the order of N square, okay, so in SDP, M can be as large as the dimension of the space of symmetric matrices. And this is on the order of N square. So when M gets that large, this complexity can get to the order of N to the power of 6, which is very large. Okay, in linear programming, this is at most N cubed. Here is N to the power of 6. Now, for sparse problems, the two first terms can be very simplified. You can simplify a lot. Can be substantially reduced, but the last term cannot, okay? Because of the fact that, as I mentioned before, this matrix is completely dense. So the conclusion is that tough following schemes are suitable for solving only small to medium size SDP problems. I'm talking about the methods that really solve the linear systems in direct way, not iterative type methods, okay? That you can use that kind of idea as well. But I'm not talking about them here. Okay, so before I move to the next topic, second part of my talk, I just want to mention a few extensions here. Nemirovsky and Tunsell consider a way of defining dual paths, a kind of a dual central path for this type of problem we talk about, and we come up with a way of developing a dual method as well as a primer dual method that either iterates in the primer or the dual, whatever there is a need to. So, and then Nesterov and Todd extended the theory of self-concordance to develop primer dual path-following or potential reduction methods for a pair of dual con programs that are dual to one another. Here, instead of having the set X, you have a con, and the dual problem takes this form. Here is supposed to be the dual cone, but because they assume the cone is self-scale and symmetric, then both are the same. The dual cone is the same as K. And the theory, although beautiful and developed in a general setting, did not turn out to be so general. The reason being is that every symmetric cone is the product of every symmetric cone is the Cartesian product of five cones. So these are the cones that you can form, you can use to form all of them. The first one is the cone of positive semidefinite matrices, then the second order cone, the cone of positive Hermitian matrices, the cone of positive definite Hermitian quaternion matrices, and another cone, a 27-dimensional exceptional cone. Okay, this fact was pointed out by Euler in 1996. Now, it turns out that there is also a result that says SN, if you understand things about this cone, you can understand things for the other three cones. So then what's left is just the last cone. So you could then, for the last part of my talk, I'm just going to consider the situation from this point of view here, in the cone of positive semidefinite matrices, which is essentially SDP. And we're going to talk about primer dual methods in this context. Okay, so here is the SDP again, the primer and the dual. When we make the assumption that P and D have a feasible solution such that both X and S are positive definite, these are called strictly feasible solutions. And we also assume that the AIs are linear independent. This means that the this is the same thing, the adjoint of A is 1 to 1. So weak duality here takes the following form. If you subtract the primer minus the dual objective function, you can show that this is the inner product of these two matrices. Since they are positive semi-definite, the inner product has to be non-negative. So you get weak duality that says that prime objective function is always larger than or equal to the dual objective function. Now, under function one, you in fact imply strong duality. That means you can find optimal solutions for P and D such that you have no gap. Okay. I make this observation that if you have a positive semi-definite matrices, then to say that the inner product is zero is the same as saying that the product as matrices is zero. So as a result, you can formulate the optimalist condition for these problems in this manner. This is primal feasibility, two is dual feasibility, and one is the product of X and S being equal to zero, which are the same as saying that this is zero or this is zero. Okay? So how does the notion of central path becomes in this context? Okay, here it's useful to change the parametrization a little bit. Instead of using T as we use in self-concordance context, we use theta. But the relationship here is that the theta here is 1 over T there, is the inverse of T. So for every theta, the system consisting of 2, 3, and this perturbed system here, you change 0 to theta times a multiple of identity, this system will have a unique solution, which is strictly feasible points, consists of strictly feasible points for the prime and the dual. And there is this proposition that says that this path will converge to a solution, of a unique solution of this system here. So here is a geometric, my first picture for this talk. This is a geometric picture of the central. This is the primal dual feasible region. This is the optimal set. And this is a picture of the central path and an arbitrary point on the path. So now I'm going to discuss how an iteration of a primal dual method works. Primal dual methods works in both spaces, both in the prime and the dual. Okay. So you are given arbitrary primal dual point. W represents the x, f, represents both the primal variable and the pair of dual variables, f and y. Okay? And associated with W, there is a point on the central path with the same duality gap, and you know exactly what the value of theta is. Theta is this mu here, which is the gap divided by n. You can compute in terms of xs or in terms of x and y in this manner. Okay. Next, you come up with a centrality parameter, which is a parameter strictly between 0 and 1. This centrality parameter determines another point on the central path, which is closer to the optimal solution, to the solution set. So sigma determines the target point. You fix the target point, and now you try to aim toward the target point, but because of errors, you cannot get there. So if you take a full step along the direction, you end up infeasible. So because of this, we have to backtrack to remain strictly inside the feasible region. So how you compute the delta x, delta w, the direction, we'll discuss later. But for now, you can assume that it's a direction whose goal is to try to get to this target point. Okay? Then you backtrack. And to backtrack, you introduce a neighborhood. This is a wide neighborhood of the central path. So you move until you hit the boundary of this neighborhood, and this is going to be my next point. And from that point, you repeat this whole thing again. And you end up with this, what I call the framework of primal dual algorithms. That's exactly what the picture is illustrating. You start with a strictly feasible point, and you come up with a tolerance epsilon. So you check for determination. If the duality gap is less than or equal to epsilon, you finish. Otherwise, you come up with a centrality parameter, which may change from iteration to iteration, and then you compute a feasible such direction so that the current point plus the direction should be a good approximation of the target point. Okay? And then next, we choose a step size so that this backtrack, essentially a backtrack, and so that this point is strictly feasible. Okay, there are things that we have not discussed. This algorithm is just a framework. You have to make it a concrete method. We have to first discuss how do you compute the search direction, and how do you you define that neighborhood so that you this step size is well defined. We will talk about it now. Okay, so let me first talk about the directions, how you compute the direction. Okay, so the equation that defines the central path point, the target point, is given by these. This is the equations for the central path, for the central path, except that the parameter theta is replaced by sigma mu, because that's the target point. The theta is equal to sigma mu. And then the natural idea is to take Newton's step toward this point from based at the current point. Okay? So, but there is a difficulty that you immediately run through is the following, is that this system is not square. It map, if you look at the right hand side, the left hand side of this system, it is a map from this space, Sn, Cartesian Sn, and Cartesian Rm, into this larger space. The reason being that if you multiply two symmetric matrices, the result is not necessarily symmetric. So, this left-hand side, the first one, is generally an n by n matrix. So the natural idea is to symmetrize this first equation. So if you do noise scaling, you obtain what's called the Elisabeth Habelian Overton direction. Then using scaling, you obtain what's called the MZ family. Okay, so what is the MZ family? So P is the scaling matrix. It's a symmetric positive definite matrix. And this allows you to define the following map. It's a symmetrization map. You're given a an arbitrary matrix M. You pre and post multiply this matrix by P and P inverse, and then you symmetrize. So you can prove that equations like these, where both X2 and S2 are positive semi-definite, and theta is non-negative, this is preserved by the operator. Okay? So you can then apply these operators to the previous system to symmetrize the first equation, and you end up with this system here. And that doesn't change anything. The target point is still a solution of this system. And now you can take Newton's step. And after you take Newton's step, you obtain this system of linear equations. It's obtained by linearizing the only thing that is not linear is this first term here. You just linearize it. And you obtain that. So the variables are delta x, delta y, and delta s. They are highlighted in brown. This is a linear system. Okay, so now the other ingredients for long step. So you need to define the neighborhood of the central path. Okay, that's the neighborhood that I illustrated in the picture in brown color, where you move all the way to its boundary. You take the step size so that you move all the way to its boundary. So this is usually a very wide neighborhood of the central path. This neighborhood is much larger than the one we talk about in the context of self-concordancy in the first part of the talk. So this neighborhood is defined like this. For gamma in 0, 1, you let these sets here, they know the set of strictly feasible points, primal dual points, such that the minimum eigenvalue of xs divided by mu is greater than or equal to 1 minus gamma. Mu is this quantity here. So interpretation of this is that this is the smallest eigenvalue of this matrix divided by the average of the eigenvalue, because mu can also be, there is this alternative expression for mu, is the average of all the eigenvalues of xs. Okay, so you're requiring the minimum divided by the average be greater than or equal to 1 minus gamma. So in other words, none of the eigenvalues are too small compared to the average. Okay? So as a starting point for the algorithm, you take an arbitrary point in this neighborhood. For simplicity, the centrality parameter that determines the target point is taken to be constant at every iteration. And the choice of the step size is the one that I described later in the picture. You take the step size, the largest alpha such that the current, by moving from the current point WK, which is the triple here, along the Newton direction, can be any direction from the MZ family, you stay in the neighborhood. So you don't leave, you should always stay inside the neighborhood. Okay, now for giving convergence of the method, we restrict the class of the MZ family a little further. We only consider the scaling matrices that are in this commutative class. P is chosen so at each iterate, we choose P so that these two matrices in here commute. These matrices SK hat are defined in terms of SK in this manner, and SK hat is defined in terms of SK in this manner here, okay? So, examples of scaling that are in this family, first is the HKM scale. There's a history behind this scaling. So many people worked on it. I'm not going to go through that, through this. It's not important for you guys. So PK is the SK half. In this case, if you take PK in this way, this guy becomes identity. And so, of course, identity matrix commute with any other matrix, so this works. Or you can take the symmetric HKM, you take PK to be SK to the power of minus half, in that case, SK hat is identity, and therefore commutes with any other matrix. Or you can take the Nesterov third scaling, which has this complicated formula here, but it has a nice feature that it makes the two scale SK hat and SK hat the same. So this is, gives a more symmetric direction, that sense. Okay, so you get this result. Let's say the long step method based on MZ family of such directions with each PK chosen in the commutative class at the current point finds an iterate in this many number of steps where the blue portion of the complexity is the same as we have seen before. Okay, is the same complexity as for the large update method. Except that you have this additional factor here, the square root of k kappa infinity, which is defined to be the supremum of the conditional number of this matrix in here. Okay? And if you use the scalings that we have talked before, we talked about three scalings. For the first two scalings, this kappa infinity is on the order of n, so the net complexity becomes n to the power 3 halves times this log. And in the NET, the kappa infinity is 1, and therefore the complexity becomes on the order of n times log times this log in there. Complexity in number of derivations. The computation of Newton direction, they are pretty much similar from one another. I've written a paper on that. But I already forgot all the details of the paper, so don't ask me now. So which one is the cheapest one to compute? You can use all sorts of tricks to reduce the number of arithmetic operations, but this is not so used anyway. Okay, so there are some related material that I had to meet for this talk. This is my last transparency. One is the extensions of what I've talked about. I forgot to mention that everything that I talk about here is for feasible methods. So the system, the Newton system could be simplified because being feasible, these two right-hand sides are zero. But you can still talk about infeasible methods that the iterates do not necessarily satisfy the condition that these two right-hand sides are zero. So then you would compute Newton directions in this manner here. And there is a algorithm that you can start in feasible as long as your X and S are positive definite, okay, but not necessarily in the manifold. You can still develop such algorithms, and that has been developed by Zhang, and other people also wrote many papers about this. And the other thing that I had to admit is in single point primer dual path polar methods that use second order or curvature information about the central path. I have a paper that introduced this, and then also Mehartwa has a very nice paper that he modifies the the algorithm, and this led to very efficient implementations of primal dual methods. His idea is used in many commercial codes these days. And finally, the other thing that I had to meet is the idea of using homogeneous primal dual framework. Instead of working with infeasible methods, you could work with this homogeneous primal dual framework to also start from infeasible points. This was discussed by, introduced by Mizumi Todd in here. So this is all for today. Thank you.